This is VOA's International Edition. Coming up, Yemen's security crisis appears to ease as the country's president and Houthi rebels reach a deal. President Obama's State of the Union call for higher taxes on the wealthy and more government spending gets a defiant response from Republicans. And Ukraine's president makes one of his boldest accusations yet of Russian involvement in his nation's civil war. I'm Michael Lippin. Yemen's embattled president, Abd Rabu Mansur Hadi, says he has reached an agreement with Houthi rebels who have besieged his residence. In the deal announced on Wednesday, Mr. Hadi offered to cancel a planned constitutional change that the rebels oppose. The Houthis, in return, agreed to withdraw from positions seized in the capital Sana'a and to release a top official whom they kidnapped on Saturday. The concessions came after 3 days of violence in the Yemeni capital. The fighting had raised alarm throughout the Gulf region and in Washington, which relies on the current Yemeni government to help in the fight against Yemen-based al-Qaeda militants. A Palestinian man has stabbed 13 people on and near a bus in the Israeli city of Tel Aviv, leaving 4 civilians severely wounded. Israeli authorities said the attack happened during the Wednesday morning rush hour, with the assailant boarding the bus and then stabbing the driver and several passengers. A surveillance video then showed the man stabbing another person on the street as he attempted to flee before Israeli police shot him in the leg and detained him. Authorities identified the attacker as a 23-year-old resident of the Israeli-occupied West Bank. Israeli media say he claimed to have acted in retaliation for Israel's war against Hamas militants in Gaza last year. Hamas militants who rule Gaza called his actions heroic, but did not claim responsibility for them. The Republican leader of the U.S. House of Representatives, Speaker John Boehner, is inviting Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu to speak to a joint meeting of Congress on February 11th. Boehner made the announcement on Wednesday as part of a Republican campaign for tougher U.S. economic sanctions on Iran, as Washington and other world powers try to negotiate a deal with Tehran to keep it from manufacturing nuclear weapons. Mr. Netanyahu is a staunch foe of Iran and often has voiced his fear that the U.S. might yield too many concessions to Iran during the months-long negotiations. White House spokesman Josh Earnest said the White House had not heard anything about the Netanyahu trip to the U.S. until shortly before Boehner invited him. While President Barack Obama appeared to set a defiant tone for the final 2 years of his presidency in his annual State of the Union address late Tuesday. But as VOA national correspondent Jim Malone reports, opposition Republicans are signaling defiance as well, especially on the domestic political agenda.
President Obama tried to return to his political roots during his State of the Union address. Mr. Obama reminded members of Congress in the House chamber and Americans watching at home that he came into office in 2009, promising to work to bring the country together.
Imagine if we broke out of these tired old patterns. Imagine if we did something different. Understand, a better politics isn't one where Democrats abandon their agenda or Republicans simply embrace mine. A better politics is one where we appeal to each other's basic decency instead of our basest fears.
But Republicans do not appear to be in a mood to buy into the president's calls. Fresh off their sweeping election victories last November that gave them full control of Congress, they seem just as intent to push their themes of smaller government and fewer regulations. Reince Priebus is chairman of the Republican National Committee.
As the last election made clear, Americans want a less intrusive government that spends their money responsibly. Yet President Obama gave another speech calling for more taxes and more spending. He's not listening. It's the same old go-it-alone approach.
The president is proposing higher investment and inheritance taxes for the wealthy and using that revenue to help the middle class. Democrats have already signaled they intend to make the issue of income disparity a major issue in the 2016 presidential election. Jim Malone, VOA News, Washington.
Ukraine's president is accusing Russia of deploying 9,000 soldiers and 500 tanks on Ukrainian soil. Speaking at the World Economic Forum in Davos, Switzerland on Wednesday, Petro Poroshenko demanded that Moscow withdraw its forces and return to a September ceasefire agreement. Henry Ridgewell has more from London.
For months, a small unit of Ukrainian troops has been defending Donetsk airport from heavily armed Russian-backed fighters. The soldiers have taken on a semi-mythical status. Kiev's government calls them cyborgs. Speaking Tuesday, military spokesman Andrei Lysenko said fighting had intensified in recent days, but the airport was still in government hands. He said it is difficult at the airport, and a building of the new terminal was partially destroyed. The now devastated shell of Donetsk airport has taken on new importance, says analyst Andy Hundar of the Ukrainian Institute in Britain.
The Ukrainians are seeing this as a symbol for the freedom and defending the attackers that are coming over from Russia.
In his State of the Union address, US President Barack Obama said the Western response to Russia's aggression is working.
Today, it is America that stands strong and united with our allies, while Russia is isolated with its economy in tatters.
Speaking Wednesday, Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov denied Russian troops were fighting in Ukraine and said Moscow was not isolated. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Nigerian militant group Boko Haram has claimed responsibility for recent mass killings in the northern city of Baga. A video posted online Wednesday shows the Islamist group's leader, Abu Bakr Shekau, declaring that "we carried out the Baga massacre and are going to do more." Boko Haram fighters also are seen showing off what appear to be thousands of rifles, along with grenades, rocket launchers, machine guns, and stacked boxes of ammunition. Shekau says the arms were captured from Baga, where the group seized a military base from Nigerian soldiers on January 3rd and then proceeded to burn down thousands of homes. Estimates of the death toll in Baga range from 150 to 2,000. And Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe says his country is in a race against time to free two hostages being held by the Islamic State group for a $200 million ransom. Mr. Abe told reporters in Tokyo on Wednesday that he has instructed officials to use every possible diplomatic channel to secure the release of Kenji Goto and Haruna Yukawa. Islamic State militants released a video Tuesday saying they would kill the men unless Japan paid the money within 72 hours, linking the threat to what they said was Japan's support for efforts to fight the militant group. The Japanese Prime Minister said Wednesday that Tokyo will never give in to terrorism. He has pledged $200 million in non-military aid to those countries affected by the Sunni extremists. Well, that's it for International Edition on The Voice of America. Join us again at 0330 Universal Time for an expanded look at the latest world news. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington.
This is Business News on VOA Global. I'm Jim Stevenson. Standard & Poor's agreed Wednesday to pay the U.S. government and two states more than $77 million to settle charges tied to its ratings of mortgage-backed securities. In its first enforcement action against a major rating agency, the Securities and Exchange Commission accused S&P of fraudulent misconduct, saying S&P loosened its standards to drum up business in recent years. The agreement requires S&P to pay more than $58 million to the Securities and Exchange Commission, $12 million to New York, and $7 million to Massachusetts. S&P said in a statement that it did not admit or deny any of the charges. Construction of new homes rebounded in December, helping to push activity for the entire year to the highest level since the peak of the housing boom 9 years ago. Builders started construction at a seasonally adjusted annual rate of 1.9 million in December, an increase of about 4.4% from November, when the usually severe weather pushed activity down. For all of 2014, builders started construction on just over a million new homes and apartments, an increase of about 8.8% from 2013. It was the first time construction has topped 1 million since the height of the housing boom in 2005. SpaceX has raised about $1 billion from Google and Fidelity in a deal that values the spaceship manufacturer at about $10 billion. The infusion was announced Tuesday. It will give Google and Fidelity Investments a nearly 10% stake in SpaceX. Although privately held, SpaceX did not reveal any concrete plans. The money could help founder Elon Musk realize his hopes to fly people to Mars within the next 12 years. That's a look at business news on VOA Global. You're listening to VOA Global on the Voice of America. Coming up, David Byrd and Now. He talks about a very influential 17th century Flemish painter who, to this day, still garners a lot of influence on you and me. We'll find out what it's all about. And, you know, while we all have our problems, there are other mammals that do, too. Whales have problems. We'll find out more with Ira Melman and the American Cafe.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. In the heyday of commercial whaling during the 19th and 20th centuries, the giant marine mammals were killed by the tens of thousands. By the time an international moratorium was put in place in 1986, some populations had declined by an estimated 66 to 90%. Since then, whale populations have rebounded, and they're improving the ocean environment. More from VOA's Roseanne Skirbel.
More people are seeing more whales today than ever before, says whale watching guide Maureen Gilbert.
2 years ago, we had this huge influx of great of the blue whales that came. Last year, we also got good blue whales. This year looks like it's going to be a stellar year again for blue whales.
Blue whales are among the so-called great whales, the largest animals in the history of life on Earth, that also include gray, bowhead, and sperm whales. For many years, they were considered of little consequence to ocean life, says Joe Roman. The University of Vermont conservation biologist is lead author of a new study that found that just the opposite, that great whales have a powerful and positive impact on how the ocean works. He spoke via Skype.
So whales dive deep to feed. They come to the surface, and as it turns out, they defecate or they release whale poop at the surface. And those that has lots of nitrogen and other nutrients, so it can increase productivity in the areas where whales are feeding.
And when whales die, they sink to the floor and provide new habitat. But even as whales rebound, they are not immune to human threats in the ocean. They're run over by container ships, caught in fishing nets, and disturbed by noise from ocean traffic or sonar signals, says Margaret Williams. She directs the World Wildlife Fund's Arctic program and spoke via Skype.
So shipping is increasing in the Arctic. Plans for offshore oil and gas development are increasing. And so World Wildlife Fund is working with government, communities, industry, and other conservation groups to identify those areas that are very, very important for whale species.
Williams says whales deserve this protection. They are, as the study underscores, more valuable than anyone ever imagined to us, to fisheries, and to the ocean itself. Roseanne Skirbel, VOA News, Washington.
Growing numbers of swimmers are trading the comfort of the pool for a workout in open water. They are known as wild swimmers. It seems an appropriate description when you consider they dive into lakes, rivers, and oceans almost any time of the year. Correspondent Tom Bonsi reports from the northwestern port city of Seattle on how the rising popularity of open water swimming is reflected in races and an unusual new business.
Sure, you'll see people taking a quick dip at Seattle's Alki Beach at the height of summer, but this is October. The salt water of Puget Sound is 13 degrees Celsius, and the air not much warmer. Hence the involuntary sound effects at the beginning of a group swim. The first one into the water is a 43-year-old tech worker from suburban Seattle, Mike Tanner.
You know, I usually swim from about May until end of November in open water, and then I go back to the pool again and wait for May again.
And so most people would probably go to Mexico or Hawaii at this time of year, right?
I'm not very bright, and it's a bit of a challenge, and I get bored in a pool.
This day, Tanner is a paying customer on an escorted swim excursion. More than a dozen swimmers, almost all in wetsuits, trail behind an orange kayak for a 1.5-kilometer saltwater swim. trip leader Gila Muir paddles the first of the support boats.
A swim excursion is not a race. That's the primary differentiation. It's an expedition. It's an adventure.
Muir has turned the concept into a business called Say Yes to Life Swims. For VOA News, I'm Tom Bonsi in Seattle.
I'm Ira Melman in the American Cafe. You are welcome in every day at voanews.com and many podcast platforms.
Hi, everyone. I'm David Byrd, and here's what's happening now. Have you ever heard the phrase Rubenesque? Well, if you call somebody that, they might think you're calling them fat. But a new exhibit in London's Royal Gallery hopes to show the wide-ranging influence the 17th-century Flemish painter Peter Paul Rubens had on art, even to the modern day. The exhibit, called Rubens and His Legacy, aims to prove that Rubens's influence was far beyond plump nymphs and cherubs or paintings that featured round, fleshy people, particularly nude women. Viewers see both Rubens' works and those of other artists, including his pupil Anthony van Dyck. Nico van Hout from the Royal Museum of Fine Arts in Antwerp, Belgium, is the exhibit's curator.
We underestimate usually Rubens and maybe overestimate some other artists. I think many major artists such as Rembrandt, Watteau, Gainsborough, Reynolds, Constable, they all were looking at Rubens, and not without a reason.
The exhibit is arranged thematically, with viewers moving from galleries that emphasize poetry to portraiture, religion, violence, and even lust. Each gives the viewers the chance to see Rubens' work and that of those who followed and even subconsciously imitated him. The exhibit features some of the Flemish master's most famous works, including the visceral Tiger, Lion, and Leopard Hunt, in which a tiger pulls an ill-fated horseman from his muscular mount, while another man holds open the mouth of a lion in the battle to the death. Curator Nico van Hout says that Rubens possessed a unique talent for showing movement in two dimensions, and his gift for portraying human flesh influenced artists for generations.
His vitality is, in fact, the result from blurred contours, contours that are not very sharply drawn, mainly in his later work. And that was so inspiring for many artists. So how to depict movement on a flat image and not cinema, it's a difficult thing. So you can do that through this trick of using blurred contours.
Visitors also get to see some of Rubens' mythological and religious scenes, including the famous Pan and Syrinx, where the lustful satyr pursues the nymph beside the river Ladon. She struggles through reeds, into which she soon will be turned. Art critic Estelle Lovett, a fellow of the Royal Art Society, told the AP that looking at Rubens' paintings is almost like watching a film, even though they predate film by hundreds of years.
The way that he tells the story, the way that looking at his paintings, because there's such movement, it's almost like they're cinematic. It's almost as though his canvases are moving, like going to the cinema. It's like watching a movie when you look at a Rubens painting.
Many painters studied Rubens' works, hoping to produce the subtle flesh tones that he achieved. But Estelle Lovett says the Flemish master's ability to capture nudes cannot be taken for granted.
It's this fleshy, squeezy, you know, I'd love, of course you can't, to be able to scrape back some of the oil paint. I'm sure it's pulsating as the flesh does.
Curator Nico van Hout told the AP that while Rubens influenced many painters, he also drew from a deep tradition that included Leonardo da Vinci, Titian, and Michelangelo.
He took from everybody, but he transformed it into his own idiom, and so that nowadays you can easily always say, oh, that's Rubens. But in it, there is perhaps an influence by Titian or by Michelangelo or by any other Italian artist. But you never, it's never obvious. So you always have to detach it and discover it into that work.
Rubens has been known for his use of colors, his dynamism, and his vitality. But the exhibit shows how his influence reached beyond his life and affected Romanticism, Impressionism, and even modern film. To see some of the paintings, log on to www.royalacademy.org.uk and look for the exhibit title. So what do you think? Do you have a favorite artist? Let us know your thoughts by logging on to our Facebook page, VOA Asia. And you can email your questions or comments to voaasia@voanews.com. And that's what's happening now. Until next time, I'm David Byrd.
You know, we get a lot of email at voaasia@voanews.com from all of you, our listeners, and we love reading all of your comments and suggestions about our program. And, you know, we've discovered that we have a wide range of listeners, some who've been around for a while and some who are rather young. And, you know, if you're below the age of 35, you might not remember some songs like Band on the Run, Silly Love Songs, Live and Let Die. Well, the guy who did those songs is back on the pop charts. We'll hear about that coming up. It's time for sports on VOA Global. I'm Jim Stevenson. In golf, Ollie Fisher holds the tournament lead heading into the second day of the Commercial Bank Qatar Masters in Doha after he carded a 7-under par 65. The young English player is one shot ahead of the field with the likes of South African Ernie Els, Justin Rose of England, and Paul Lowry of Scotland in prominent positions.
Fisher's the winner of one European Tour title in the Czech Republic in 2011. A former Walker Cup player, the 26-year-old has already had a good finish under his belt in Abu Dhabi.
Last year I started the season well. I had a good finish down in Africa. Made quite a few cuts last year, so it's just a matter of giving yourself chances and kind of if the consistency is good and if your level of play is okay, you can kind of keep trying to improve. You know, I've had it a few years where I've struggled a bit with my long game, and then, you know, you're kind of always working at things and trying out stuff and going out on the course and not really sure about what's happening. You know, my feelings are pretty consistent right now, and it's just a matter of keep doing more of the same.
He's benefiting from the form of last week, making 8 birdies in a controlled performance. Rafa Cabrera Bello second, while there's a logjam of players on 5 under par. Ernie Els says he's as comfortable with his game as he's felt in a long while.
For the first time in a very long time, yes. I can say that I actually feel comfortable with most aspects, all aspects of my game. My mental game's quite good, you know, it's still quite fresh. So, you know, I'm looking forward to the rest of the week. It's the first time I've put myself in contention, you know, since the South African Open. But, you know, it's nice to get back in contention from the first round.
Twice Doha champion Paul Lawrie is looking back to form after a lengthy fallow period.
Well, I hit it nicely again. Obviously, last week was the first real kind of nice week I've had for a wee while. Finished 20th, which is not a great week, but you're getting there slowly. And it's all about building the confidence for me at the minute. I've had a couple of years where I've not played very well and been injured and hardly played a lot. So it's about kind of round by round, just trying to get myself back into a position where you've got a feeling as though you could contend in a few tournaments. And today was what it was all about. I kept the ball in play, putted nicely when I had my chance. And in the afternoon, I think 5-under is a good score around here.
Brandon Grace is continuing his good run. And Rose is there on 4-under, laying a good foundation for the week, with Sergio Garcia and Henrik Stenson also nicely in touch.
Nick Dye reporting. That's sports on VOA Global. Paul McCartney is back in the top 40 on Billboard's Hot 100 for the very first time in more than 25 years, thanks to Kanye West's song Only One, in which he's featured. The song debuted a couple weeks ago at number 35. It's McCartney's highest charting since his song My Brave Face, which he co-wrote with Elvis Costello. That one reached number 25 back in July 1989. West and McCartney co-wrote and co-produced Only One, which is a ballad for West's daughter, North, sung from the perspective of West's late mother, Dr. Donda West, who died in 2007 of heart disease while experiencing adverse complications from plastic surgery. Let's hear Kanye West's Only One.
As I lay me down to sleep, I hear her speak to me. Hello, Mari, how you doing? I think the storm ran out of rain, the clouds are moving. I know you're happy, 'cause I can see it. So tell the voice inside your head to believe it. I talked to God about you. He said he sent you an angel. Look at all that he gave you. You asked for one and you got two. Mm-hmm. You know I never left you. Cause every road that leads to heaven's right beside you. So I can say, hello, my only one. Just like the morning sun, you keep on rising till the sky knows your name. Hello, my only one. Remember who you are. No, you're not perfect, but you're not your mistakes. Hey, 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 hey. Oh, the good outweighs the bad, even on your worst day. Remember I'd say, hey, hey, one day you'll be the man you always knew you could be. And if you knew how proud I was, you'd never shed a tear, have a fear. No, you wouldn't do that. And no, I didn't pick the day to turn the page. I know it's not the end every time I see her face. And I hear you say, hello, my. Hello, just hello. And when you cry, I will cry. And when you smile, I will smile. And next time when I look in your eyes, we'll have wings and we'll fly. Oh, my only one. Just like the morning sun, you'll keep on rising till the sky knows your name. And you're still my chosen one. Remember who you are. No, you're not perfect, but you're not your mistakes. Hey, 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 hey. Tell Nori about me. Tell Nori. I just want you to do me a favor. Tell Nori about me. 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 Tell Nori about me.
Only One, Kanye West's first single from his forthcoming seventh solo studio album. And if you listen very closely, the great Paul McCartney in there for his fifth collaboration to crack into the top 40. Music on VOA Global. Well, at this time of the year, Fairbanks, Alaska can be a rather cold place to be, but it can also be a fun place. Workers there are building an ice playground in Alaska's interior. It includes a pirate ship slide made from 65 refrigerator-sized blocks of ice. I would suggest wearing a few pairs of pants if you're going to go down it. It might be a little bit cold. The work began at the George Horner Ice Park in Fairbanks ahead of the annual World Ice Sculpture Championships, according to the Fairbanks Daily News and Miner. A giant ice lens is also planned for the park, according to the championship's chairman, Dick Brickley. It will be 12 feet in diameter and powerful enough, he claims, to focus the sun's rays and start a fire. Okay, an ice lens that can start a fire. I guess they're going to warm up a little bit, or at least they're planning to have some heat there. They say the ice is so clear the rays go right through it. One small telescope in the past started a fire on a piece of plywood, and the ice didn't even melt, which is pretty amazing. Another new attraction this year is an experimental sculpture that will be carved on land and then displayed underwater. Maybe that'll keep the ice from melting for a while. The attractions must be completed by time the park opens on February the 23rd, and that's when teams of artists participating in the 2015 World Ice Art Championship will begin making their sculptures. Our show is rapidly melting, so we're going to do some credits. Dave Magnus has been at the controls for us, Studio 22. Thank you, Dave. Tracy Carter is our producer and director. Diane Gao, our managing editor. I'm Jim Stevenson. Thanks for joining us today on VOA Global. Come back again tomorrow.